There's something about that intro that gets you hyped. I'm telling you.
We're ready.
MJ Productions, man, great job on that intro. Welcome to Community Focus. Hi, I'm Gregory T. Roberts.
I'm Melvin Burns.
Welcome to the show that it's all about news, information, and more, educating you about issues that you should be concerned about. And we got some great guests today. My brother, let's do some housekeeping. Remember that the shows repeat themselves, so some of you are driving and will like to watch this. It will be on all our streams, including Facebook 106, WVS 103.7 The Beat, and YouTube as well. Also, we want to say congratulations to the Emoji app, which is now on Amazon. We're really happy about that. The show is sponsored by Bishop Custom Series and Entertainment. Remember, for all your entertainment needs, please see the Bishop. So much going on. Also, we can't forget our brothers. Visit Tanzania for Less. We want to thank them for sponsoring the show as well. Let's go into our top five and weather, sir.
Top five news stories. Mayor Eric Adams has had all charges dropped by the Justice Department during the same period of time. We had several resignations in Justice Department in that district, and four of his deputies have resigned in the past week. The United States and Russia are in negotiations concerning the war in the Ukraine.
Without Ukraine.
Ukraine is not a part of those discussions.
Okay.
Just make that clear.
All right.
If you like sports, one of our third story, the four-nation face-off was a tremendous success during All-Star Week.
Canada.
apparently they booed our friends from the North booed the national anthem every time it was played, but they backed it up. They defeated the U.S. in overtime last night when it was a tremendous week of hockey. Layoffs continue in the federal government and are ranging from all type of departments, all levels. That process continues. That's four. And I was torn between these two. One, we all grew up with you and I grew up with Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
50 years. So I caught a little bit of that show last week, but wow, 50 years of Saturday Night Live. So that's 5A. 5B, I just heard this morning coming in. After years and years, the New York Yankees have done away with their no beard policy. So you can now have a beard and facial hair if you play for the Yankees. I may just give them a tryout this spring. That's the only reason why I never played for the Yankees.
Weather outside, it's nice.
Yes. I saw sunshine today.
Well, I saw this thing in the sky. I couldn't believe what it was.
Low 19, low 16, high of 31. Cloudy over the weekend, though, low 22, high 29 on Saturday. Sunday, low 27, high of 35. Monday, get your short pants ready. Low of 34, high of 41. Tuesday, low of 33, high of 41, partly sunny. Wednesday, 50% chance of rain, not snow. Low of 32, high of 40. And then Thursday, partly sunny again, low of 28, high of 38.
Thank you, sir. All right, for all you people that are listening and watching, listen, if you want to get a chance to get into the conversation, you can do that by catching us on Facebook, 103.7 The Beat, or M106, and we can take care of that. Speaking of, all right, let's get to our first guest, and would you do the honor, sir?
Yes. To our audience, I want you to join me in welcoming to our program, Dr. Donna Lamar. Oh,
the Reese's spell first.
I'm sorry?
The Reese's.
Oh, well. Scratch that. But she's coming. Our first guest is Nariisa Smith, who is a summa cum laude graduate of Spelman College.
Wow.
And magna cum laude of Howard University School of Law. She's clerk for two judges, extensive background in constitutional criminal law, criminal procedure, and critical race theory, as well as women and the law. She comes to us with extensive background and the legal issues around affirmative action, criminal justice, and DEI, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit today. Would you all join us in welcoming to the program, Nariyssa? I'm hoping I'm not saying Nariyssa Smith. Please correct us if I said it wrong.
Yes,
all
right. Yes, Nariyssa. Very good. Very good.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Before we go in, because we got so much to talk about in 21 minutes, but tell people a little bit about yourself.
First of all, thank you for that very kind intro. I did not know that you all were going to say all of that, but yes, originally from Michigan, so I really appreciate the outfit that you have on. Even though if it was green and white, I would like it even more. Oh. But I went to Spelman and then to Howard and clerked and was a law professor. And I also am a journalist. And this year, my first book came out called Fighting for Equality. And it's about racial injustice in North America. So in Canada, the US and Mexico, against not just people of African descent, but Latino and Asian and indigenous folks as well.
With that said, it's been a busy year for you.
It's been a busy year for everybody.
Are people talking about these issues lately?
It's been a lot of things going on.
Yeah. That's the understatement. Yeah, that might be the understatement. I know we're only 25 years into this millennium, but yeah, that might be the understatement of the millennium so far, because this, you know, we're in a very interesting time. Someone brought up, I was reading something the other day, that allegedly Chinese proverb saying, may you live in interesting times. There's some debate as to whether or not that's a Chinese proverb, but it was popularized by Robert Kennedy, senior, not junior. Okay. somebody was saying, they're like, you know, we've already, even before this election, we had lived through some pretty interesting times. So somebody said, can we get to the boring part? You know, sometimes too, you know, I would appreciate some boring, you know, kind of interesting, you know, we've had enough of interesting for it to last us a while.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have interesting happening for quite a while.
Absolutely.
You decided to write a book. What made you decide to write a book?
Well, actually, the publishers reached out to me because one of the people on their team, one of the other things that I've done is I do often teach African-American and women's history classes for middle school and high school students. Mm-hmm. And someone said, hey, we're looking for someone to write this book and we think that you would be great for it. And I said, absolutely, I love to do it and the reason why I wanted to do it is I really do think that this moment in history where we are shows us what happens when you turn your back on history. Yeah. And when you don't understand what happens. Like, for instance, you know, with the deportations going on, if people knew what happened in the 1940s and 50s to Latinos, I'm not going to say the name of it, it was a very racist name, but they had, it was called Operation Blank. And they were deporting people, mm-hmm. you know, allegedly, but a lot of them were American citizens. That's going to happen. Again, I've already heard stories of people who are Puerto Rican being stopped by ICE. And if you know, you understand why that's a problem.
Yes, that's a problem.
We are Americans. Why? Where are you going to deport us to? Like Miami, San Juan, you know, San Antonio? Like we are from here. Yes. So I think that if people understood that, they may have been more careful. If more people understood the history of how the U.S. annexed Mexico and how basically half of California, all of New Mexico, which is why it's called New Mexico, Arizona, you know, that was actually all Mexico first. And there's a whole horrible story of how those folks once America annexed that land, what happened to their land and how it was taken to them and the agreements that they had to make to survive and what happened to their families. You know, so again, I think that, I mean, we came to this point in time for a lot of reasons, but I think that a lot of people took the majority's ignorance of history and manipulated it. Mm-hmm. I feel confident in saying that. So, oh, well, since you don't know what's happened before, we're going to, you know, tell you everything's going to be all right. But if you've read this story before, you know, I don't know if either of you've had children, but you know, when you're a parent or an aunt or uncle, grandparent, you spend time with small children and they want the same bedtime story every night.
Yes.
You read it so many times that you could recite it from memory after a while.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel that for us, history is like that. Very little changes in history. If you've read the story, you can pretty much predict the ending and what's mm-hmm. going to happen. You know the story beats, right? So it might be a sequel. The people might be different, but the plot lines don't change that much.
Yes. We got so many questions. I'm just firing.
And if I'm ever talking too much, please feel free to jump in.
No, because you're educating us. You're doing great. Listen, but what you said is that people should know the indicators. People should know the history. People should see what have happened before. But how did we get in this trap that we're back in something that has been happening over years and years, and now they're totally trying to erase history?
Oh, well, that one of the things I've been saying, at least since the Supreme Court, when they overturned Roe in the Dobbs case, there's a reason why that's relevant, because people were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that they could do that. And I was explaining to people, like, all our rights are precious, unless you are a wealthy, straight, white man, right? Mm-hmm. Got to have all four of those. Mm-hmm. Wealthy, straight, white man. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, your ability to live and exist in this society is up for debate. There's no guarantee. So a lot of people were shocked because, you know, most people, I know I fit into this category, had not lived in a world without Roe. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I'm bringing that up is the other thing I was saying to people is this didn't happen overnight. The second that Roe was decided, there was a group of people who mobilized and decided that they did not want to have that. And they organized and they kept at it. It took them almost 50 years, but they got what they wanted. So why am I talking about that? Well, a couple things. Because there are a few things that go hand in hand. So I want to take this in two parts. I want to talk about what's relevant to politics, and I want to talk about what we can learn from them, or rather what they learn from us. So point number one, we have to understand that nothing happens overnight. Let me rephrase that. History shows us that when it comes to marginalized communities, people of color, disabled folks, LGBTQ community, bad things can happen overnight, but good things take time and sustained movements. Mm-hmm. I always like to tell people, if you look at, most historians will put 1955 as the start of the modern civil rights movement, because in that year you have both the death of Emmett Till, that happened in that summer and that trial. And then on December 1st, you had Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat on the bus. In 1955, Black folks were fed up. They were tired. They'd had enough. But that was 1955. The Civil Rights Act that abolishes segregation effectively in this society doesn't get signed until 1964. That's 9 years. So it took them 9 years of working and marching and protesting and politicking and having sit-ins and doing everything they could to draw attention to the cause. Whether it was working in the halls of Congress, there were folks that were talking to JFK when he was president, and then when he passed, President Johnson. But they were working. They had a goal and they were working towards it, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at how we got to this moment in time, and I went back to that for a reason. I like to tell people, when slavery existed, the people who were pro-slavery didn't just up and die. They kept living, and they were mad. As the kids would say, they were big mad.
They're big mad and got reparations, but we won't go there.
And that, you took the words out of my mouth. And it's the only group in this country to this day that has received well, also the Japanese Americans, but that's slightly different. We can come back to that. But then they didn't just be angry. They taught their kids to be angry. They taught their kids to be angry. And then their grandkids were the ones that when Ruby Bridges and Linda Brown and the Little Rock Nine were trying to integrate these schools, those grandkids of those slaveholders were the ones who were spitting at them and throwing food at them and bullying them and intimidating them, right? Now, you might think, well, that was all a long time ago. No, it wasn't. I'm not that old, I like to think. I'm not 50. My father went to segregated schools. He's not that old, but he was born in Mississippi. So the first schools he went to were segregated, right? Again, saying all of this to say they were mad. But then after 1964 Civil Rights Act, 1965 Voting Rights Act, 1968 Fair Housing Act, Black people and other people of color start to take places in America, start to get jobs, start to get educated. And quite frankly, what scares people is our level of education took off. Our level of high school dropout just decreased. We start to take off. And that made people angry. Now it's the grandkids of the folks who spat at Ruby Bridges and the Little Rock Nine and all them. They didn't just go away. They taught their kids hatred as well. Mm-hmm. And so we as a nation have never had a reckoning about the role that racial hatred has played in this country. Mm-hmm. We never have. And because we never have, we have categories of people who embrace the racism and love it and want to stoke it. And you have people who want to ignore and pretend that it's not there. And then you have other folks like us who are trying to fight back against it. So mm-hmm. I wanted to give that historical thing to show that what we're going through is not new per se, but this is just the 2020s version of what's happened to us before.
For there's nothing new, nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new under the sun. Absolutely.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Michael Anthony Smith says, people don't understand how government laws can work, good or bad. Anything can be revised. Which, hey, thank you, Mr. Smith, which is scary because they're messing with the 14th Amendment.
Well, they're trying to. Now, there's good news and bad news on that. The good news and bad news on that is that the bad news is that they clearly don't want birthright citizenship, right? And even though that might not affect certain African Americans, it definitely affects people who have Caribbean folks in their family and people who are migrated from Africa, people who migrate from Asia. That's who that's targeted. Notice when they talk about immigration, they never talk about people coming from Canada, Sweden, Switzerland. You know, it was the Haitians that were eating the dogs and eating the cats. It wasn't, you know, people from Belgium. So we know what that dog whistle is. But the other thing that we have to recognize is as we go and view. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. Just slightly, we have to, as Mr. Smith said, we have to understand our rights, because if we don't understand our rights, we can't fight back. So the good news is that the 14th Amendment says that birthright citizenship is a thing. And as much as Trump thinks he can, and as much as he literally called himself a king the other day, he can't change the Constitution by himself. That requires a constitutional convention and a whole lot of other stuff. But the fact that he's trying to do it ought to give us all pause about what their end goal is, because I don't think it's hyperbolic to say if it were up to them, they would be happy having only white Christian people being able to hold citizenship as U.S. citizens. I don't think that's unfair to say if they had their way. That's what they want. Okay. So there's we should all be concerned about that.
There's a phrase that's creeping into some of the conversations and writings intentionally. That's that we're in a post-constitutional era. Mm. What does that mean?
You know, I know what they're trying to say. They're trying to say he's acting like the Constitution doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But you know what's interesting about that is it doesn't matter what he thinks. It matters what we do. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about this a lot because there's not a lot that shocks me about what he's trying to do because I kind of figured all of this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But when he and J.D. Vance started talking about how, you know, they don't have to listen to the courts.
Yes.
If the courts don't listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of made me pause a lot because that means that they want to show that they have no respect for the rule of law.
Yes.
And that should make us all worried because if there are laws that protect us, we can't trust that they're going to follow those laws. If the courts tell them, no, you can't do that, we can't trust that they'll comply. But that has happened before. When the Supreme Court decided Brown versus Board of Education, again, going back to what I was saying, those white parents in those white school districts didn't just say, oh, well, we lost. Come on, let's go home. Mm-hmm. They were so committed to segregation. There's one school system in Virginia, and this happened when I lived in D.C. Rather than integrate, they shut down the public schools for the whole county rather than integrate.
Hmm.
And of course, they helped the white kids find private schools. But a lot of those black students who had worked very hard, they didn't graduate because their schools didn't exist.
Wow.
And this is something we've seen before, too. Granted, back then it was on a state level.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were saying, we don't have to listen to what the Supreme Court says. And the Supreme Court came back and said, well, yeah, we kind of think you do. And then Dwight Eisenhower, who was the president at the time, said, no, these kids are coming to the school, even if I have to send the National Guard with them. This is what's going to happen. So what we're going to need to see now is it's going to be flipped, right? So since we have the federal government acting like they don't have to follow the rule of law, it's going to be up to our governors, our mayors, and other folks to protect their citizens. And they're going to have to take the onus and the burden on of saying, no, that's illegal. It's unconstitutional. I'm not going to do it. So that the fight is then between the Trump administration and them, as opposed to individual people and them. So hopefully, you know, we'll see some governors and some mayors with some backbone that will stand up. But since one of your top five stories was about Eric Adams and that whole thing, I don't know. There's a lot that, you know, remains to be seen.
Yes.
Let's go back to Houston, Texas. Michael Anthony Smith, 32 states required to ratify or change the Constitution. How close are we to that?
Not quite, because there's two different ways to do it, both of which require ratification. So the amendments can start in Congress and be ratified. They can start in the state legislatures and be ratified, but it still takes a majority of the states, a supermajority, to be able to affect that change. And going back to what Mr. Smith is saying, that's one of their end goals. They're kind of kicking the tires, as they say, on trying to see how far they can get with certain things, because they would love to have a constitutional convention that rewrites and takes the things out that they don't like. Mm-hmm. They would love to have that. But here's what we need to do. Remember how I said a moment ago that it took them 50 years to overturn Roe versus Wade? We have to, as they used to say, keep our eyes on the prize.
There you go.
And remember back when, you know, they voted for George W. They voted for McCain. They voted for a lot of people, and they didn't always get what they wanted. And sometimes the Supreme Court disagreed with them, just focusing on Roe to keep it with one example. But they had that goal in mind, so they kept voting that way. And they kept voting that way because they knew that if they kept doing it and kept doing it, then the day would finally come, right? Meanwhile, what happened on our end is and this is not me saying that, I heard Elaine Jones, who was the past head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, I heard her speak when I was a law student, and she said, after the civil rights era, she said, too many of us got comfortable.
Say that again. Please say that again.
Everything was all copacetic and didn't realize the threat that was lurking. Yeah. Meanwhile, these folks who are against affirmative action and abortion and all this stuff, they use the same handbook that Charles Hamilton Houston, the man who organized the strategy of Brown versus Board of Education, they used his strategy. They said, we're going to go state by state. We're going to pick out the best courts and try to see what we can do and get the best cases that we can do it. We have to do the same. We have to be focused on saying, this is what we want. And if the only thing right now that we want is just not to have them in power, that's all right. But we have to also talk about, in addition to what we don't want, we have to talk about what we do want. And I think that most of us would agree, you know, at a minimum, that we don't want unelected people, you know, going through government documents and looking through people's social security information and other stuff like that.
Right. Tell people a little bit, because we're down at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have you back, because there's so much stuff to talk
thank
about.
Thank you. I would love to come back.
Great. Talk a little bit about, before we go, what to expect, a little bit what to expect out of your book and how they can get it.
Oh, well, the book is able to be purchased at all major retailers. You could also look at my website, www.nariissaspeaks, that's nariissaspeaks.com, but Barnes & Noble, Powell's, all of those. I also have a list of Black bookstores on the website, which is why I wanted to mention it. Don't forget your independent booksellers and your Black-owned bookstores, and you also libraries. So there's different ways to get it. And I'm specifically only mentioned one of those places because a few of the places I had on there, I don't know if we want to support them anymore. So I'm okay with Barnes & Nobles and Powell's. I don't know about the other ones, right. But what you can expect from the book was written with middle school and high school students in mind, but I do think that adults can learn a lot from it. And what you can expect from the book is to see how in three different countries, the stories of the groups have very similar things. There was a civil rights movement in Canada that mirrored the civil rights movement in the United States. They have their own version of like Rosa Parks and other. So we've been fighting the same battles, but just, you know, on different sides of, you know, the border. How they approach the issue of race and culture in Mexico is a little bit different because their history is different, you know, and they had to fight a revolution to get away from Spain. And that informed the way, good and bad, that they look at their indigenous population and their African descended population. So those are things that you will learn about in the book. And I hope that you all will check it out.
Want to thank you so much for coming on a Community Focus. We're going to have you back because there's like a lot to talk about.
Oh, I'm happy to come back anytime you want to have me.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
Thank you.
That's deep. Awesome. That's deep.
Yeah. We'll definitely have her back soon.
We have to have her back. But you know what? We have a very interesting person, Dr. Donna Lamont, is coming on to talk about trauma and all the stuff that we talked about the first half hour still, I mean, deals with trauma.
Yes.
A little bit, but we're going to let her talk about that. It's the bottom of the hour. You're watching Community Focus on 103.7 The Beat and M106 as we take a commercial break. Welcome back to the show, Community Focus, formerly Torn in Two, with Gregory T. Roberts and Melvin Burns. And we have a special guest to talk about an issue a lot of people don't want to talk about, is trauma.
Yes.
Maslin.
Yeah.
When introduced.
Our guest is Dr. Donna Lamar. She's the clinical director of the HOPE Project, and she has extensive experience in this area of trauma-informed care. And we certainly want to just jump right in with her. The microphones are hot today. Would you all join me in welcoming to the program, Dr. Donna Lamar?
Hello.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Thank you. Well, I'm so glad I'm here. Thank you for inviting me. It's been wonderful.
Your resume is just fantastic. All the things, we want to thank you for all the things that you've done, your career. Tell people a little bit about yourself before we get into a very extensive conversation about trauma.
Let's see, I probably will give you a little bit of my background because people say, why can you talk about trauma? Okay, you're a psychologist, you're a doctor. Okay. But everybody looks at me and say, well, you know, you got your act together, you've got a PhD, highest level, okay, you look good, you've got a look for, you know, and you've got a practice going and you've got books out, and they say, well, you've got it all together. Well, guess what? What if I tell you that I was dedicated to Satan at the age, a very, very young age as a child, and then put in the cult for a while. And people go, whoa, she may know what she's talking about. She may know. Yeah. Wow. And so from my background, and then I had a very abusive mother, alcoholic father. Yeah, all the crazies went with it. So we had to take a look at, I had to take a look at that and say, hey, what am I going to do with this? Mm-hmm. And I knew I needed to heal. And that was my journey of learning how to heal, not only myself, but other people. And that led me to many degrees. The one is the last one was a doctor of psychology or philosophy, as they call it. And also I'm a clinic director of the Hope Project, which is a program for sexually trafficked girls and women. And we work very hard to help them heal. We have worked very hard to just give them what they need to take the next step. They come and they have nothing. They often don't have a place to live. They don't have clothes. They don't have food. And we have so many things in places that we help them. And I'm the clinic director that oversees the therapists that are there, helping them heal. And so, and it's all trauma. And like we were just talking about, you know, what's happened in our country. It's trauma. It absolutely is trauma. And the trauma is racism. It is mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. Trauma, there's no limits. It takes and hits the entire body, entire person. All parts of us are hit when we're traumatized. And please jump in with your questions, please.
There's so many. Yeah. Describe to people the general term of trauma.
Okay. I love the definition. I've seen many definitions. I've created definitions because I'm an author, but the best one came from one of our teenagers in a group, and they said, it is something that happened that should never have happened.
That's good.
It's just, it flatlines it. It just says, here it is. And that is the best definition I have of trauma.
So
it should never have happened.
As young individuals or people that say had things happen to us, what is the first thing that we have to do? Is it that we have to recognize that there is a problem?
We usually, by the first time that a person to take a step, you mean take a step to heal and do something about it?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, we get tired of being in pain. We get tired of actually being in horrible pain. We say, I am tired of living this way. I don't want to live this way anymore. And what happens, and that's my first book, it's called If Marie Did It, So Can I. It's about the transcender, what I call the transcender, the person that says, I will no longer choose to do what those people did to me. I will choose to have a different life. I will make my life different. I will make it count, and I will make a difference in this world. I will not be like them. What that does, it separates them from the family. And they have to find their way. And often one of the words I or the questions I ask is that, did you have to raise yourself? And people that have not done it look at me like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. But people that have been traumatized, they go, yeah, I get it. Because we have to choose to find another way to grow up. another way to learn, another way to do life. And we have to choose it because our what's around us has not been good. And these transcenders, many, many of our productive, wonderful, incredible, world-changing leaders are transcenders. They come from these backgrounds and said, I'm going to make a difference. And I just get ecstatic when I hear about them because they go forward. But again, trauma affects us everywhere, every part of our being, emotional, mental, physical. We are mind, body, spirit. Every part of that, those areas are affected by trauma. Mm-hmm. It doesn't miss anything.
Dr. Lark, let me ask you this, because dealing with a lot of people in public settings like I do, are there certain behaviors and people that you see or notice sometimes, and you, I know you don't want to label people, but you kind of say, I see some issues there they haven't dealt with and how they talk or how they treat people?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Since it affects us, we have to find another way to live. We have to cope with all the pain. Let me back up. When we've been traumatized, we have a lot of feelings, hurt, pain, anger, sorrow, everything, jealousy, all kinds of feelings. And they get crammed in our bodies and are stored in our bodies in neuropeptides, which are part of our cells. So I have to cope with that, all that pain. My brain's got to engage and say, how am I going to do this? How do I go out and get do life when I've got all this pain inside of me? So we have to find other ways to do it. And one is, you know, addictions. And we people can get addicted to anything. anything. We can get addicted to people, to stuff. I mean, America, I think, has got a stuff addiction everywhere. That's materialism. I got to have, you know, having Amazon grow, you know, come up to my door every day or whatever it is. Poor relationships come from that. And because our feelings are stored in our body, we get sick physically, mentally, and emotionally sick. We get fibromyalgia is a big one. We have heart attacks, like stored up anger that we store in our bodies gives us heart attacks, strokes, colitis, arthritis, high blood pressure, ulcers, and the list goes on. And people say they had a attack or a broken heart, and we can.
I love what you talked about you know, people that overcome the trauma that they had in their past.
The transcender. Just because
you know, I look at my childhood and the trauma and stuff like that, and something inside of me at the age of 5, although trauma was going on, said, that's wrong. I don't want to be like that. I want to do it differently.
There you got it. You're a transcender. Yes. And it can happen at any age. 5 years old. Middle school is a big age for them to make that decision. I had one person that talked to me about, she says, I just knew that I had to do that even before I was born. I knew that I was going into something bad and I had to take care of me. And she went through life coping, being a, like a, back then it was retarded. We now call it developmentally delayed. But that's what she was. And she was in all the developmentally delayed classes. And when I was interviewing her, she was a PhD candidate.
Wow.
Yeah. We have to go, whoa. Yeah. Do you know how she survived? And then she clicked on. Then she found herself.
Dr. Lamar, we probably shouldn't have to do this, but we do. You know, and you know, in this age we're in now, people want to brush this off as feel good, poo-poo. I know your mom, you know, you didn't get breastfed or you didn't get pat on the head enough, but yeah, you know, you have science behind what you're talking about.
You just want us to feel sorry for you.
Yes.
Yes.
So, yes. I wish that was that easy so you could feel sorry for me and I'd feel better.
Yes. Yes.
But the journey of healing it's very simple, but very difficult and very painful. Simple is that already I'm God-based, so it's like we have this incredible system already in our body that says, when I feel, I heal.
That's good.
I heal, but we have to feel appropriately. I can't come over and slug you because I need to go to jail. But I can come and I can get angry. I can beat a pill. I have a punching bag in my office and a bat. And I have what they call a damn it doll that you just kind of beat it around and you get the anger out or you get the feelings out, you cry. Because when we do that, those stored up feelings in our body, they're now in the neuropeptides are released.
That's good.
Yes. And the body gets released. The head gets released. So I don't have to work so hard trying to control all of it. And then I get what I love this part. And when I do that, I get wisdom. We don't get wisdom any other way.
Wow.
Amazing. Wisdom. Imagine you can speak to it. You're a transcender. You can speak that. I've healed. And yeah, look what I've gotten from it. Absolutely.
Wow. I know the whole project and I know some of the people that you deal with and stuff like that, but not only do you deal with women, you deal with, you've done with children, 11, 8, coming in that have led a terrible life.
Preborn, because if I've got a mother that's pregnant, I've got someone that's pregnant in a domestic violence situation, that baby's being affected.
Mm. Wow.
It is never too early or too late. I've dealt with 80 and 90 year olds. They come in my office and say, I'm going home pretty soon. I'm dying pretty soon. And guess what? I don't want to go home with this.
All right.
All right.
I feel like nothing I've ever seen before. Just amazing. Just amazing. Yeah.
Dr. Lamar, tell us about your latest book, because then I want to ask you a question about it also.
Okay. Yeah, I've got one. I don't know if you can see it. Ooh. Yeah. Okay. It is called The Trauma of Rejection, because, well, it was really a struggle for me. It's taken me 3 years to write it because it was such a, it's a lot of research and it's a lot of my processing, being in processing and healing and learning about it that went in the book. So it took a while. It is about, because we don't talk about rejection. Because if we talk about rejection, that's my shame. How can I tell you I'm rejected when I've got all this shame? And you can't know my shame, because if you know my shame, you're going to reject me some more. And so I can't show that to you. So, and yeah, sometimes we've talked about it, but this is all about, let's talk about the rejection. We all have it. We've all had it happen to us. And it, when we're rejected, and obviously in my history, I was given away to evil. And so it's like, okay, I was not, whatever that was for them. But rejection is it cancels us. It crushes us and it cancels us. And it's, I'm all I have. And when I've been rejected, me, all of me, there's nothing more I am. So what I have to do is I have to pretend to be somebody else. I have to get all those addictions going, or however I'm doing coping skills to help me get through it. One of my things was I became a rager like my mother for a short time. And I was good at it. And finally said, I'm not doing this anymore. This isn't okay. And then we changed it. We transcenders go, oh, okay, I'll just change it. Not easy, but we do it. And so rejection, we need to go into the pain of rejection. And forgiveness is a huge part of it. We have got to forgive in all trauma. We have got to forgive the people that hurt us or situations that hurt us so I can get freed up.
It's a must, because when you think about it, if we don't get that, the anger and pain out in a constructive, a correct way, our sadness, emotions, or past rejections, like you said, or we don't get those out in a healthy way, we tend to trigger back to those.
Oh, we go back. No, absolutely. It's when it's ingrained in us, because we had it since we were little often. And what I give people is three rules about feeling feelings. And I tell people, if you don't follow the three rules, I'm coming to get you, and then we're going to have a retest after I teach you again. One is, you cannot hurt yourself. You can do anything with your feelings, but you can't hurt yourself. Two, you can't hurt something alive, plants, animals, or people. That means you can't kick the dog. You can't yell at people. You can't swear at people. And first I had one wonderful gentleman said, does that mean I can't pull my weeds? And I'm going, you, all right, you got me. And the third one is, I can't damage property when I damage. Don't throw phones. They're too expensive. Usually guys are the only phone throwers. Now women are getting into throwing phones. I'm going, don't do that. So you can't hurt yourself. You can't hurt something alive, and you can't damage property you don't want to damage. And following the three rules, I can do anything and everything, beating up a pillow, screaming, pounding all by myself wherever I need, in the middle of the woods or whatever. Some people like to twist things. It depends what you like to do to get rid of those feelings. And when it's grief, and grief is one of, when we're healing, grief is one of the first big, huge feeling processes that comes up. I've never seen it not be that process. And grief has fear and sorrow and anger in it. And it sometimes is gut-wrenching. Sometimes we are doubled over in pain when it's coming out. Mm-hmm. We have to allow that to happen. So the body's wringing itself out of these feelings. The body knows what to do. We just have to allow it to happen, following the rules.
Doctor, boy, so many questions.
There's so much in the trauma. There is.
But when you're dealing with, I was listening to the radio yesterday, and it was talking about that we're dealing with years of trauma undealt with, and how that's
decades
dealing with us right now.
Generational.
Yes.
Yeah. That is, and actually has a name. The neuropeptides, it's actually been medically researched and documented. We know they gave us the name neuropeptide. There's another one, it's epigenetics, is what is also coming from medical research.
So that
epigenetics, to what's stated in the Bible, because I happen to just know those connections, is that four generations of pain and trauma is going to get passed down to the next generation for four generations.
Wow.
Well, that's what medical science has now found. Four generations of trauma is going to attach the DNA in tags and get passed down.
That is struggling with trauma, that feel that they don't know, they can't go nowhere, they don't have finances to get out of a situation, or they look at the trauma and just say, well, that's just the norm. How do we break out of that and get them to a healthy cycle?
I personally challenge them to say, do you want to keep living like this the rest of your life? What's it doing for you? I get very real. I'm very upfront and I'm very real. It's, what's this doing for you, and how long do you want to live like this? Mm. Because you're giving me a bunch of garbage right now. And that is one of the words I use. I'm not the usual nicey-nice therapist. I get down. Yeah. We're not going the right way here. Yeah. And then we have to get them to help them become a transcender. To say, you're right. I don't want to live like this anymore. I do want to go forward. I do want to make a difference. And we can do that. And we can teach transcending. Well, as you know, 5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to live like this? Who taught you to live like this? That's the other question I ask. Who taught you that? And did you like them? Did you like being treated that way? Why are you passing it down? Mm-hmm. So we can challenge it. We can teach that you can become a transcendent. You can be someone that says, I don't like the way I'm raised, and I can make my life different. And they can make that choice. That's a thinking process. It's not even a healing process. It's a thinking process that we make that choice. It's a turning point for us that says, I will be different. And I don't know about you, but if you want to see me get really like, not as much anymore, but most transcenders, if you say to them, you know what? You're just like your mother or father who abused you. And we just go, no, I don't think so. I'm going to change you now. No, I can't do that. Because it's such a powerful turning point decision. And that's in my first book, the If Marie Did It, So Can I, about the transcender that chose to make their lives different, and how they did it growing up, and how they got out of the house, and their healing process, how they healed from it. and we need to celebrate. I can't encourage this enough. We have to celebrate us who have gone through these horrific backgrounds. However, whatever it looks like, trauma is trauma. We're not comparing pain to pain. These horrific backgrounds that we have to celebrate us and say, way to go. Look what we did.
Nice.
And let people know that we did something very special instead of hiding in what we think is our, we should need to stay in the shame that says, oh, look what happened to you. You must be a terrible bad person. Come out and say, look what I did. And teaching other people how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the generational aspect of trauma and
rejection. Oh, yeah, we didn't finish that, did we? You're right. No, we can go another direction.
No, we're fine. No, you know, all of us, I think this is all of us, we often, you know, dealing with the under 30 generation, I would say for now. And, you know, we don't understand them sometimes, but how do they deal with these issues of rejection differently than us older folks?
Wow. When they're ready, when people are ready to heal, mm-hmm. The healing process is pretty much the same. It's individually for each person, mm-hmm. but it's the same process. We have to feel our feelings to heal. And when the generational stuff comes, it just comes up, and that's what we deal with. We talk about, we help them feel it. And it is healable. I'm here to say that we can heal from horrible backgrounds. It is a choice.
Yeah. When you talk about some of the things passed on through genetics, so some of what we might be dealing with when we think, you know, 18, 19, 20, it's not just their life experience, but things that have been passed down. And just like we think alcohol and drugs are passed down, people are predisposed to that. Some of these issues with are predisposed and passed down as well?
Yeah, they're tagged on us. But as we grow and heal, we go, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. My father's alcoholic. Do I have the gene for alcoholism? I have no doubts how I've reacted to one particular drug someone gave me when I had a migraine. I just wanted 5 or 10 more. Thank you very much. And I'm going, that's not normal. That's not a normal response to a drug.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we can choose. I just chose I will never take on another mood-altering drug. Never. I know that that is not the way I wanted to go because my family went that. Is there part of me that's still saying, oh, yeah, dang, drunks, I could just, you know, going, whoa, stop, because that was ingrained in me. I saw it. I saw it from my father and impressed. It was put inside of me. But that doesn't mean I act on it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to fight. We have to fight to say, I'm not going that way.
I like that. You said we have to fight. And speaking of fight, you have some activities coming up. And we want to name those books to make sure people know how to get
it. The two books I always recommend, the If Bree Did It, So Can I, How to Survive, Heal, and Transcend Abuse and Neglect. Because if you're a transcender, you'll find yourself in there. You'll find yourself and find out you're not crazy. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that trauma victims usually have to know, is they're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the trauma of rejection, healing, understanding, and spirituality. How to heal from it. How to really say, wow, it wasn't me. It was what was done to me. And there's a definite healing processes in that book that people can do. And on March 8th at 6:30 at Kingdom Life Church, and I'm going to read the address, I don't know, 1215 East Apple in Muskegon, we are having a healing from trauma talk and healing time. And while everybody's invited, it is it's open to the public, and we'd love to have everyone come and say and that they can heal. They can choose to become the transcender and overcome what happened to them and make a difference in their lives.
I'm going to say that's a very inviting church. Well, it's the church I go to. But what do you say, because I know we got to wrap it up, but what do you say finally?
It's not a church function. We're renting the church space.
Yeah, what do you say to that person that says that I brought this on myself, or it's nobody's business. I can deal with this, and they don't know how.
If I have a good relationship with them, which takes me a little bit of time for us to get to know each other, I usually tell them that's a bunch of garbage because I know that's not true. I've been there. I can handle it. I can do it. Yes, I'm strong enough, and I can look what I've done and look what I've overcome, and I needed to heal because the pain didn't go away any other way, and I didn't want to live in the pain anymore.
One more question. How important is that we stop being enablers to people?
Say it again. I lost the question.
How important that we stop being enablers to people that are going through trauma? And like you said, you use some real interesting language when it comes down to people. But some of us, it's, you know, we're giving hugs instead of saying, slap us on the head, wake up.
We can say things like, I'm sorry you're hurting so much. I can't imagine what that trauma was like. And you don't have to kill through the rest of your life that way. And not carry that through. Not carry it, not go down with it. And encourage them to get into therapy because therapy is scary to them. It means I have to look at me. You know, what's she going to ask me? What's she going to make me do? And I basically say, I'm reflecting back to you. Because what happens is Michelangelo, one of my favorite artists of all time, and he did these big, huge, massive sculptures. He would not touch it for a long time. He'd look at the big chunk of marble. And then as he got connected to the marble, he'd visualize that image, what that marble was supposed to look like. Then he would get rid of everything that was not the image. That's what healing is. It's getting rid of everything that's not the image and everything that they were always meant to be, the real, true, authentic self.
That's good. Dr. Donnell, we have some more. We're going to have you back on the show because trauma is just not a one-time situation that we can cover so much.
Yes, it's huge. Yeah, I would love to come back. Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, that's the end of the show. Brother, wow, so much stuff here.
What a good show today.
Yeah, great show. Listen, you've been watching Community Focus on 103.7 Debate and M106. Listen, this year we've said seek knowledge, seek wisdom, seek the truth. Don't stand back and fall for everything. Take care. God bless. We'll see you next week on Community Focus.